we were created for connection, and we're looking for deeper connection than we used to look for.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaders, and welcome to The Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. My guest in this episode is Lori Graham, and we'll be talking about some of the big ways that volunteerism has changed recently and how we as church leaders can respond to these trends. Lori runs smallchurchministry.com, an online ministry that provides resources and support for volunteers and ministry leaders in smaller churches. This is Lori's second time on the podcast, the last time she was known as Lori Acker. And in this conversation, we'll talk about how church volunteerism has been affected by people's changing schedules, by their desire for deeper meaning, and by their need to restore trust and more. And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with a quick story about how the church I served changed one of our programs a few years ago so that it fits better into people's schedules, that it matches the way they live and learn now, and how our change has increased engagement substantially. Lori Graham, welcome to the Church Lobby. It is good to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
You have a great ministry for small churches, and you put out so much content. You and I are in very similar spaces, so I don't know. There's probably somebody out there that would want to make us competitors, but we're not. We're
no, similar spaces, but totally different audience, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and even if we were, there's a whole lot of small churches out there. There's plenty of audience for everybody and plenty of need out there, and you meet a particular need of helping with volunteers. So I'm speaking primarily to pastors and church leaders. You speak primarily to volunteers. And so out of that, you wrote an article for my blog at carlvaders.com called Six Big Shifts in How People Volunteer and How to Respond. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to basically take that article and just pick your brain about the pieces that are in that, because you come from that space. You speak so well to church volunteers, specifically small church volunteers.
Yeah.
But that landscape has changed. People don't volunteer now the way they used to volunteer, right? Let's start with that as a basic.
It is totally different. And I think one of the biggest issues that we have, big church, small church, every size church, is we're still trying to recruit volunteers, get people to sign up, even run our programs the way it's always been done. And that is not the culture we're in now. People are different, you know, throughout history, through generations, you can see shifts in people and humans and their understanding. And we're in a different time than we were 40 years ago.
Yeah. So the first thing you point out in your article, and helpfully so, is talking to the typical church leader who may be wondering, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my church? Why aren't my volunteers stepping up the way they used to? The first thing you tell them is, it's not just you. This is a societal shift that every church and every volunteer organization is facing at the same time.
Yeah. And I think when we say what's wrong with them or what's wrong with me, we've already started off at a disadvantage. Because what that does in our brains, the way God created us to be, is it literally starts coming up with all the things that are wrong. And I love to say there is nothing wrong. Let's just embrace what we have. Let's be curious about what's going on. Like, the blame game doesn't help anything. The blame game does not move us forward. Understanding can come in better ways than sticking the blame on somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I've seen happen a lot, especially from my generation, I'm a late boomer, and now some of the Gen X folks are stepping up and they're acting like old coots too, I've noticed.
I've seen it too. Yes.
Yeah. A lot of us do who are older and who've been around and who remember the way people used to volunteer is we look at it and go, what's wrong with today's generation? Mm-hmm. Why aren't they volunteering? Mm-hmm. Why don't they want to help out? And what I've discovered, and I know you agree with as well, is that new generations are not less enthusiastic about volunteering. They just volunteer in a completely different way, right?
Yes. Oh, 100%. And one of the things that I didn't even talk about in that article, which I think is so foundational, and it's kind of umbrellaed through a lot of things, but people aren't transactional anymore. Like, we don't like transactions. You do this, I'll do that. You do this, I'll do that. Like, we want to be valued for our presence, not just for what we're bringing in. And I know for me, a lot of people in church spaces, including people who have left churches or trying to find new churches, one of the things I hear over and over again is, can people just love me for being here and not want something from me? Like, it's not about a role. We don't want to be loved for our role. A lot of people want to serve, they want to find significance. But that value, it needs to start with person-centeredness. And I think Jesus modeled that. And I think we've gotten away from that. But I just think throughout everything we're going to talk about today, I think that's a big part of it, is like we've got to put people's value, not just in what they do for us.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an important starting place because we're going to get to the points in a moment and we'll get practical about it. But I think it's important to lay this solid foundation that there is a sense in which, like, as we said, there's a shift in the way people volunteer. But it used to be, as you said, more transactional. It was more, when I was younger, almost all of our lives were connected to institutions. So
Yes.
you didn't just go bowling, you joined a bowling club. You didn't just decide you were going to crochet. You joined a crocheting club.
Yeah.
I was driving somewhere in my neighborhood the other day and I saw a truck and there was an Elks Club ad on the side. And I went, whoa, they're still around.
Wow, that was my first thought. They're still around.
Yeah, right. There's still an Elks Club in the town
Yeah.
next to me. But back
Yeah.
then, everything was about the club. Everything was
Yeah.
about what was institutional and everything had a
Yeah.
transactional aspect to it. So the shift of the way people volunteer is not from a more biblical way to a less biblical way, but it's from a more institutional way to a more personalized way.
Yeah. And I believe that's biblical. Like a
Yeah,
lot of
I,
times
yeah.
we hang on to our tradition, like this is biblical. This is, and when we really look at church history, the way our modern churches run, they're not based on what Jesus
Right.
did or even modeled, you know, the institutional part, the hierarchical part, the program-centered part. So.
It's really easy to assume because something changed that the change must be bad. But I'm seeing a whole lot of real positive things and a lot more biblical approaches in some
Yeah.
ways
Yeah.
to the way people are volunteering. So let's start with that.
Agreed.
We are not talking about fixing problems here. We
Yeah.
are talking about adapting to new realities.
Yeah, and embracing the goodness. Like it's not even just like sometimes we say adapting to new reality like it's a negative thing. Not that you were saying that, but I know sometimes
Right.
people feel like that. Like this is a cool opportunity. Like it's an opportunity to do ministry, to love people in a different way than we've had that opportunity before.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a look at the six of them, and we're going to concentrate especially on a couple of them. But let's start, and we'll just go through the list in the order that you wrote them. Point number one that you made was this: volunteers are tired, even if they're not overcommitted. So you're starting right off with something that everybody can relate to. We're tired.
Yeah, pastors are tired too, right? Like,
Yeah.
let's just reduce this to human condition. Everybody's tired. Like, even if they don't look overcommitted, sometimes we look at people's schedule and go, well, how could they be tired? They're not involved. Like, I can't even tell you how many times people say that. I am busier than them. They should be stepping up. The amount of stuff in our schedule does not equate to exhaustion, burnout, tired. There are a lot of things in today's society that contribute to emotional fatigue, decision myth. Fatigue, even just the general overwhelm that we have about how our lives are supposed to go. A lot of people are not on autopilot in the same way, right? They're thinking deeply about a lot of things. Like, you know, I'm not in my career forever. I can decide, okay, is this working for me? Should I find a new career? Should I go back to school? Even the types of things that weigh on us, people are just tired in general. Right. And this is where I speak a lot against being program centered. Like, let's be people centered. We actually don't need as many programs as we think. We don't have to keep running churches how we used to run them. It's not even meeting needs. And we're still like fighting this thing that isn't working. Right. But yeah, I think people in general today, can we just assume they're tired? People are tired.
Yeah, so when you connect that to the conversation we already had previously about previous generations being so institutional, when I was younger, one of the signs of a church's vitality was how many programs they offered. That
Yeah.
was not a great way of doing it, but that was how we almost all did it.
Yeah.
And people were looking for a place that's busy. That meant something's happening. Nobody's looking for busy anymore.
No, they're not. People
Yeah.
appreciate streamlined. It's the whole trend, even in curating information for people, right? Like, there's so much information out there. Curate this for me. Tell me where to start and where to go. Don't give me all these options. Don't give me so much stuff. It's like going into the cereal aisle, right? Like in the grocery store. Oh my gosh, just tell me which one is good for my body right now, right?
Yeah, in fact, the studies have shown one of the reasons Costco and Sam's Club are so popular is because it's not just about the size of the items that everything is so supersized, but the limits of the item. You can go to a Costco or a Sam's Club and you're not going to be overwhelmed with decision fatigue because you're going to walk up and you're going to see two types of spaghetti sauces, not 25 types of spaghetti sauces. Now, you're going to have to buy an entire crate of that spaghetti sauce, but at least your choices aren't going to overwhelm you. So what you're talking about with exhaustion was when people used to say, I'm tired, what that meant was I spent the entire day out harvesting, or I spent the entire day at the office, and there was a physical exhaustion at the end of a long day of work. Today, you can be actually doing fewer physical things, but the constant bombardment of information, the constant number of decisions we need to make. In fact, right now, the next book I'm working on, it'll be book number six coming out hopefully later this year, 2026, is about decision making. How do we get through this maze of constant decisions that we have to be making? They call them now micro decisions, and it's 10 to 20 times more decisions we have to make in a typical day than a person had to make 40 years ago. So it's a different type of exhaustion. So people aren't looking for stuff to do, they're looking for something simple. So for those of us who are church leaders and we're going to volunteers who are tired, we need to be approaching them not as, I want you to do one more thing, but we are only doing these few things that are of extreme value. So they're looking for value and not for busy.
Well, and you just said, not that I want you to do one more thing. What if we just flip that and said, I just want you to do one thing, right? Not one more thing, but one thing.
There you go.
Going into a typical small church today, I've been to a couple in the past month, right? Announcements. Like, this is like, just to get really practical, what's going up on announcements? We have this going on, we have this going on, we have this going on, this going on, pick and choose, pick and choose. It's overwhelming, like, even just an announcement time. And I think we do, like you said, we need to stream back a bit and really look at where we're beyond our capacity, even as a church. So,
So let's simplify the church. Let's give them people things that are of obvious value rather than bombarding them with stuff. So that's number one. They're tired, even if they're not overcommitted. Number two is this: volunteers want flexibility, not forever. And you talk about the importance of thinking in seasons. This is something that I have spent a lot of time talking with pastors about. That the way I put it is the expiration date is your friend. When you ask somebody to volunteer for something, tell them when it's until, rather than you're just going to be stuck teaching Sunday school until you die or Jesus comes, right?
Well, and I think volunteers, like this point number two about volunteers wanting flexibility, not forever, I think that's playing out. And I think volunteers are demanding that now. That's why so many Sunday schools are short teachers, because they have seen this play out before and they're like, no way. I'm not stepping into that. And I think that is one of the reasons we're seeing that, because people, we're learning a lot more about boundaries, and maybe in some really unhealthy ways, because I think most teaching out there on boundaries, just in general, is not really a healthy way to do it. But people are learning that. So they have seen things turn into forever positions. They're not doing it anymore. It is so different to break. I give this example. We teach this a lot in our network and in our community. When we break things down into smaller pieces, you will be surprised who comes out of the woodwork to serve. They're excited to serve for their summer because the summer is when they're not traveling with their job, or they're excited to serve in the spring because their kids' soccer season is over. But when you ask them this big long-term thing, they're like, N that's does not fit with me. I can't even think that far ahead, right? And so I think that flexibility, not just in like seasons as far as like winter, spring, summer, fall, although I think that's really valid, but also in what time can I serve? How are we communicating? There's so many different ways we can offer people flexibility that works better with not even just their schedules, but also their personalities, right?
And one of the challenges in this is most of our church structures were built for a previous generation's schedule and not for this generation's schedule. So for a lot of pastors, maybe looking around and going, but I can't have someone teach in Sunday school for a season. It just keeps going and going and going. Well, maybe we need to look at our Wednesday night Bible study. Maybe we need to look at, the way we do some things. And this is going to be a significant structural shift for a lot of churches to become more adept at seasons that people can step into. So it's going to take some work. So here's what I want to do, because I want to take a few minutes in some bonus material to talk about these kinds of shifts and how to offer a flexible schedule for people when our church schedules are structured for something else. I want to do it in the bonus material with you.
Great.
So if you are listening, here's how you can get the bonus material that Lori and I will be doing, as well as all the bonus material we've created from most of the other podcasts. You can get it one of two ways. Go to carlvaders.com/support. And if you become a monthly supporter, you'll get a copy of all of my books. You'll get every new book when it comes out. Plus, you'll get the free newsletter every Friday that has a link to all of the bonus material for all of the podcasts, including the one that I'm going to do with Lori. Or if all you want is the link to the bonus material, you can get that as well for free. Just go to carlvaders.com/subscribe and you'll get the free weekly newsletter. You won't get all the other stuff, but you'll get the free weekly newsletter and you can get all the bonus materials. So just do that. So we'll talk about how to rethink our church programs to adapt to the way people volunteer today in a more flexible way. So that's number two. Number three then is this: volunteers expect to be developed, not just deployed. I smell discipleship in this one.
And as I look at that, and I remember when I wrote that, I don't even know if expect is the right word. I think they desire to be developed. I don't honestly know if they expect to be developed, at least not by the
That's
church.
a
I
good
think we're
point.
used to not being developed by the church. We're used to being, I'll just say it, we're used to being used by the church to get things done and fill in roles. And but I think the deep desire for people today is we want to be developed. We're learning more about becoming who we can be, even in a Christ-centered way. I'm not even talking secular, let's envision all these things, but who God created us to be, we want to be more of that. We see more potential for that. And to get stuck into a role where we're not learning or growing, that's one of the fastest ways to drive people off your volunteer teams. When people just feel like they're cogs in a wheel, somebody else could do this. I'm not learning. I'm not growing. We are missing out when that's how our teams function.
Which, as we talked about already, is a much more biblical approach. Take a look at how Jesus, how the Apostle Paul worked with those who followed them. They didn't just give them an assignment and then send them off. That happened, but it happened after they had watched Jesus and watched the Apostle Paul do it, had been able to ask questions about it, had been developed in their understanding of it. Then they were sent off, and then after they were sent off, they met back again, and what they did was assessed to say, hey, this went well, this could have gone better. There was constant developing happening. It wasn't just delegation. I've seen this and I've heard this complaint from so many pastors. It's something that I come back to regularly, where I talk about discipleship and we talk about things like volunteers and training people up. And I've had people, still pastors, regularly say to me, I tried that. I tried delegating and it fell apart and I had to do it myself. And my point and your point is, we can't jump from doing it ourselves to delegating it to someone else without doing that absolutely all important middle piece, which is discipleship, development, training, mentoring. You can't delegate to someone yet you have not discipled. You've got to train them first.
And you mentioned in maybe one of the last points that our churches are built on a like they're built for what used to exist in our schedule, in our. I also believe they're built on a not healthy hierarchical structure. Because as we were talking about this, I'm like, I know what pastors say. I don't have time. Developing is long. It is. It takes longer. It takes a lot longer for things really to come to fruition, which honestly is how Jesus lived, right? He didn't expect to just call somebody up and have them serving at this event next week or, leading the small groups tomorrow. It's longer and it takes a lot more work. And what I teach from is, yeah, pastors, you don't have to do all the developing. Can we just all develop together? Can we raise up everyday people to be leaders, not just your leadership team? Like, I'm all for let's share the good news with everybody, even the person in the pews who's not super committed or who feels like, may feel like they're not. Can we just raise up everybody to be in a community where we're learning and growing together and developing together? I don't think it has to be the pastor who's just developing because I think that's where we get stuck. It's too much. It is too much. It is too much. Share this podcast with the people in the pews, not just your leadership team, right? And say, "Hey, let's do this together."
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know when we talk about de developing people and discipling people, there's a whole lot of small church pastors and bivocational pastors, especially, who look at that and go, I just don't have the time. I say this lovingly, but I'm going to say it firmly. Pastor, if you don't have the time to disciple, you're not pastoring correctly. Because that's our calling, is to disciple people. There's something about the structure of your church and about your understanding of approaching ministry that is just unbiblical and off kilter if you're looking at discipleship and going, yeah, I don't have time for that. Get rid of everything else and keep discipleship. I mean, that's what we're all supposed to be about. And as Lori is saying so wonderfully today, coming from the volunteer standpoint, this is not something that people feel imposed upon by. This is really what they're desiring the most. They want to be developed. They want to be discipled.
Well, and I think too, when you say, because my heart just goes to total empathy for every small church pastor who just heard you say they're doing it wrong. Because I think the word discipleship for a lot of people, what it brings up is, oh my gosh, it's one more thing to do. And I think when we can reframe discipleship as loving people well, this is walking alongside people. This is sharing our lives. This is sharing our struggles. This is sharing what we're learning. This is kind of growing together. I think the word discipleship even brings a, I don't know, just another cereal box on the wall. Like, oh my gosh, it's one more thing to do. Versus real discipleship is like doing life together. Like, let's love people well. Let's share well. Let's learn together. Let's journey, through this together without feeling like, oh my gosh, that's one more thing I'm not doing well, right?
Yeah, and I hear you, and I sympathize with everybody who felt burdened by what I said as well, but I stick to it. Because discipleship is not one more thing to do. Discipleship should be what's infused in everything we do.
Yes,
And so, if we're doing it in a way where discipleship feels like an add-on, then we need to rethink so that discipleship isn't the add-on, but so that discipleship is the reason for it. If you've got a program that is not discipling people, you need to seriously ask yourself, then why are we doing that program? Because it's all supposed to be a part of discipleship and development. And when that shift happens and when that change occurs, there's actually a lightening of the burden for everybody and not an additional burden to it.
Exactly.
I know that the anticipation of making that shift is terrifying. I know because I went through it. But I can tell you from someone who's on the other side of that, it is worth the transition to make. So,
And I think the fear isn't based on what needs to happen. I think it's just based on what we've seen taught before, right?
yeah, I
So, yeah,
agree.
totally
Yeah,
agree with
yeah,
you.
yeah, yeah. And now a short break to talk about something else. If you like the content you're hearing, here are two things you can do for us. First, forward this podcast to a friend. Second, consider becoming a financial supporter through Patreon, Venmo, or PayPal. Just go to carlvaders.com/support. For as little as $3 a month, you can help us put these resources into the hands of the ministries that need them the most. Our support link is in the show notes. All right, then number four, volunteers need more trust because they've seen too much. I want to spend some time on this because this is huge today. If I had to pick just one thing that people outside the church think of and feel when they look at the church, what would it be? What's been the biggest shift in the way people perceive the church today than they did a generation ago? This would be the one. We've lost their trust.
I don't think it's just people outside the church. I think it's people in the church too.
Yeah, I think so too.
There's so much skepticism and hesitation and fear and quietness and I think the church as an institution, not as a people, right? But as an institution, we've lost a lot of trust and it's deserved.
So where has the loss of trust come from?
Wow, there's so much stuff. I mean, so much church hurt, so much toxic leadership, so much bullying. I just think it goes down to emotional health. I think the society around us is growing in emotional health, in emotional awareness, in being okay with our feelings. in being able to call out injustices. My daughter's an elementary school teacher, and she talks to kids about how they feel, and that it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to be angry, and it's okay to be grieving. And we might say that in the church, but truly, we really give everybody a badge of honor when they're strong and they go through something. Like, oh my gosh, they went through so much, and look at their faithfulness, and look how they maintained their joy. And we kind of give this to people. So beyond like church scandals, I just think we've develop these communities. I call it a lot of Jesus frosting, right? Where we're just Jeanine McConaughey, who wrote the book Trauma in the Pews, she talks about people leaving their stories in the car. People come to our churches, they leave their stories in the car because their stories aren't welcome in the church. They're hard stories, they're difficult stories. And it could be, trauma from childhood, it could be things happening at work. But we kind of come in because this is what good Christians do. We're going to encourage one another. And we've kind of shut down the other like real human feelings that we have. And so I think some of our society around us, not all, but some of our culture is getting healthier. They're starting to understand shame and blame, even like Brené Brown stuff and, just things that are taught in leadership now and in secular environments. We've got to make space for this. And the church makes less space. So I think that erodes our trust because we can't be real. But then in addition to that, we've all seen we're protecting bullies and like major injustices, right? Major abuses that have happened. And so I think it's a little both and. It's the little stuff, that erosion of we can't really be real. And then there's that, wow, really bad things have happened and nobody is stepping up. And we've thrown everybody off the pedestal, except in churches where they haven't. And most of those churches, I would say, are really unhealthy.
No, I agree. There really are two pieces here. The one is, of course, the scandals, the abuse, these horrific situations which need to be exposed, will continue to be exposed, even though every time they're exposed, there's a damage and a fallout that is horrific. That needs to happen. It's part of the cleanup that needs to happen. The light needs to shine on these dark places. They need to be exposed. So if you're sitting there and going, but we don't have that, good. I'm grateful. I'm glad for that. But you got the second part, which is I think there's an unintentional eroding of trust, even by people of good character and good intent. And some of this is the generational shift that we've been talking about. A generation ago, when I was raised, for instance, even just the simple mannerisms that pastors were taught, sometimes directly and sometimes just picked it up by osmosis from watching other pastors, come across today as bullying and as manipulative, even when back in the day they were the character traits of being authoritative and being trustworthy. So things like raising your voice when you preach, pointing at people when you preach, the kinds of language and the kind of mannerisms we use, radio voice was literally taught back in the day. Why? Because we didn't have microphones that would carry the voice, so you had to, right? So back then, people looked for that in their ministers because it felt authoritative and it felt strong and it felt reliable. And today, those exact same mannerisms that you may have been taught either directly or you picked up from the pastors you admired are now hurting you in ways that you may not realize because
Yep,
they're no
100%.
longer seen as authoritative, they're seen as manipulative.
Or power, like positioning.
So we need to be careful. Obviously, first of all, we should be not hurting people. So the let's stop committing the things that are creating the scandals. But secondarily, in a much more benign way, let's also be careful about unintended ways that we are sending messages that we don't intend to send.
And with that comes a lot of learning. Like, we need to be open to learning and understanding, because, as you mentioned, like, intention doesn't always equal impact. And we can't just say, oh, that's not my intention, and keep doing the things that are impacting people in hard ways. We've got to be curious enough to say, okay, what's going on, and what do I need to learn? And the words trauma informed, trauma responsive, trauma sensitive, these are important phrases. And for churches that are like resistant to that, I think you need to press into that because it does affect your volunteer development, retention, recruiting, however you want to say that. It's affecting it incredibly today.
Especially as we're talking about, recruiting volunteers, bringing them in, giving them a place where they feel their gifts are going to be valued, and so on. When our language and our, I'm trying to figure out the right word for it, our stature, just the way we present ourselves. Right now, for a moment, I'm talking just to preachers. So the way we
Okay.
present ourselves from the pulpit, when it has a bodily stance of invitation, then it reinforces the idea that this is a place of invitation. This is a place where you are being drawn in. This is a place where you will be developed and not lectured. But if our stance physically is one of distancing ourselves with a big old pulpit, with yelling, with talking literally, physically down to them from a high platform, with pointing gestures, all those kinds of things, we are distancing ourselves from people and we are telling them, I am the authority here. If you're going to step up, you're going to do it my way. And we're losing volunteers without intending to, even by the physical stature that we hold from the pulpit sometime and by the way that we're speaking. We can speak exactly the same message with exactly the same strength, but do a shift of mannerisms that is more welcome and more opening. This is something that I had to learn. I had to learn early on in ministry because I was taught, I'm right on the border. I was taught by that old school generation and just came into active ministry as this new way, this more invitational way, this softer way of presenting was coming up. I could have pushed back against it and called it names, or I could have done what I did, which was, okay, this is maybe a better way for people to hear what I'm intending to say and to draw them in rather than pushing them away. So that's my little rant.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to number five then. Volunteers are motivated by relationships, not just roles. We've kind of been, dancing around this idea quite a bit already. Let's talk about that because we now have, you say it in the piece, we are in a loneliness epidemic. We are trying to connect to people through screens, and that is not how we were created to connect to people. And so when people physically leave their screen to come physically to a church building, I think we have an even higher obligation than we did before to help them to connect to relationships and not just give them a role to fill.
As I'm looking at that statement now of volunteers, because we're talking about the shift, right? Like
Right.
what's different today? I think we've always been motivated by relationships. Like when you started talking, I was like, gosh, when you're a little kid, how do you decide which party you're going to go
Oh,
to?
yeah.
Well, who's going to be there? Who's going to be there? But in past generations, the role became more important because there was a maybe an appreciation that the church is the place, a place to be involved, a place to be respected, right? So I think the role got a little more
Yeah,
important,
yeah.
right? And now I think we're just going back to ground level of humanity. We were created for connection, and we're looking for deeper connection than we used to look for. And again, as we're learning more about human beings and connection and our psychology and our
Yeah.
physiology and even the fact that, touch affects our health, right? Like physical touch affects our health, and acquaintance relationships actually make a difference in our lives. Like we didn't used to know that. That's just been something that's been studied a lot, lately, probably post-COVID, but I've seen more and more on that. Like even knowing the person's name at the grocery store, the bank, or going inside instead of going through the automation. Even those, I think we're just learning so much more about relationships that we're going, oh, it could be different. We could have relationships. And so I think people are really looking for that in a different way, more than just I'm part of that ministry team, right? More than just I'm on that committee.
I think a generation or so ago, relationships happened a little more organically within the physical neighborhood in which we lived. But now a lot of it has been replaced by technology. So back a couple generations ago, if you liked music, you had to learn how to play an instrument because you couldn't just hit the Spotify app. Okay.
Correct.
Right. And even there were multiple steps before that. You had to physically go to a record store. Every one of these steps of technology has taken us further and further away from, okay, if I want to have a conversation, I used to have to physically go to somebody's house or have them physically come to my house in order to have the conversation. And then that got replaced by the telephone, and then that got replaced by online. So each of these technologies has increased our ability to communicate, but has severed us from in-person relationship. And we're emotionally poorer for it. So now we have to be more intentional about developing the relationships because it's not going to happen automatically or organically like it used to.
Yeah, and we need to learn skills. Like we need to learn skills. Most people in most churches, pastors included, volunteers included, we don't have great relational skills. Like, we're not welcoming people. We're not talking with them. We're scared to ask how they're doing. We don't know how to respond when things are going wrong. We're not good at giving empathy. We want to be comfortable. We kind of want to avoid the tough conversations. We're scared to be vulnerable. Like, I think this is an edge of learning. It's not just, hey, let's build ministry teams instead of having committees. Like, it's not that easy. It's we all need to learn some better skills in developing real safe relationships where we're talking and going deep. Because as you said, like, people are craving this in a very different way. And it doesn't just happen by posting a greeter at your door. That's not going to do it anymore.
No. We can't assume relationships anymore. We have to be intentional about them. Yep. All right. Yep. And then the final of the six is this. Volunteers are thinking missionally, not institutionally. You say younger generations especially are asking bigger questions.
I love this. I get so excited. I know you're watching me on video. They don't get to see me, but I'm like on the edge of my seat right now trying to do a happy dance. This is something my kids are in their 20s, so I'm in my 50s, and I have spent a lot of time in youth and children's ministry and also spent, I don't know, about 10 years in high schools working for a different organization, but I was going to different high schools every day. And I saw this shift happening in front of me. Like, kids, even 10 years ago, they want to make a difference. They realize they could do a blanket drive and help the homeless. They realize they can save animals now. You know, we've got all these campaigns out there, you know, and we're valuing so many different things. We can sh save the whales in the ocean. I think part of it is that the fact that we are so connected with so many needs now because of the internet, because of our technology, right? We see so many needs. People want to make a difference, and they always have been. So when churches say to me, I don't know why nobody's signing up to teach Sunday school because they think Sunday school isn't making a difference. I mean, I hate to say it, but
Yeah,
why
no,
aren't
I know.
people signing up to help at this Vacation Bible School or at the outreach event we have? Well, because they don't really think it's making a difference. Well, wait, we're going to go down and feed the homeless. Yeah, you're going to feed the homeless one time. Right. And so I think people really are thinking very missionally. Volunteerism in a lot of places is up. Giving is up in a lot of places. People are giving to things that they believe are going to make a difference. Like, I want to leave a legacy. Like, how many people even think about leaving a legacy today versus I need to work my job, keep my head down, do what I'm supposed to do? It's very different. People are thinking in broader ways, but I really do believe people want to make a difference. And I'm not saying, by the way, Sunday school isn't making a difference or Vacation Bible School or that outreach event, but we don't promote it that way.
Right.
So many times we're saying, if we don't have volunteers for Sunday school, we're going to quit doing kids Sunday school. Or if we don't have this, we're going to cancel that event. No. Like, you need to come because this is what happened in Sunday school. This is what happened at this event. This is the neighbor we met at the last hot dog day when we had a slide, you know? We need to be talking about what's happening missionally, how we're making a difference. And if we don't have those stories, we need to find them, or we need to change what we're doing to get them. But people do want to make a difference today. I 1,000% believe that.
Yeah, one phrase that I have constantly used with my congregation is this: we don't want to be the bowl where the blessings end up. We want to be the pipeline through which the best blessings flow.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But too many churches are structured to be the bowl where the blessings end up. Right? And if that's all people see, and that may not be the case, you may be a real pipeline and you may be blessing, but if they don't know that, if they perceive you as the end point for their time, for their resources, for their finances, for their giving, if they see you as the end point, you will severely limit the input. So not only do we need to build the pipeline, we need to show them that. They need to see the missional results of what they're doing. They need to be able to have some, and you mentioned it already, they need to hear stories of that. This is, I think, is one of the shifts that's happening. And maybe I'm more sensitive to it because of our ministry to small churches, but I believe this is one of the shifts that's happening, where there's less emphasis now on attendance numbers and more emphasis on impact. And I think that's a healthy shift in the way we're looking at the effectiveness of churches.
Oh, yeah. I'm even embarrassed as you say that's even a shift. Like, how did we even get
I
so far
know.
off? You know, like, that should never have been a shift. It was not modeled by Jesus. I think I may have shared this the last time I was on your podcast, but I just think all the pastors listening right now, many pastors, when they find me, they feel like they're failing. How do I grow my church? How do I grow my church? And I just go, you know, if Jesus was here today doing exactly what he did, he would be considered a failed pastor. We would look at him like, you're such a failure. Do you know how many church pastor coaches are going to want to get their hands on Jesus? Hey, let me tell you how to do it better. Let me tell you the 5 steps. You know, I mean, Jesus died with no following. He was rejected. Like that's what it was. You know, like I don't know how we got to where attendance became the mark of success. Well, I do know. I think people took the passage in Acts way out of whack and just went, oh, Jesus, you know, God's adding to their disciples daily. That was a description. It wasn't prescriptive, right? So.
Well, so much of this has so much to it. So we spent time on it. And now we promised that we were going to talk about some ways to answer it. And you put in 6 answers to it. And we're just going to have to go through the answers pretty quickly. But they can also go to the article. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. So how do we start making some of these shifts in some of these ways? Some of them we've already kind of gone through, but let's go through the 6 of them. We'll throw them at you one at a time. First of all, shift from guilt to invitation.
You know, I'm going to say this because I think this is going to cover it all these 6 things. I think we need to invite people into the visioning of everything. We need to stop inviting people to help with something, to volunteer for a program that exists. The most changes I've seen in churches when they have really shifted their culture, it's when instead of asking people to volunteer and help with this and that, they're actually part of creating the vision. How do we want to do this? What do we want to do? Because the 6 things in the post, these all happen naturally when we invite people into the vision. Like when we stop thinking we're the smartest person in the room and maybe they actually have something to offer and invite them into the vision. Because the shift from guilt to invitation, like we're inviting people into the vision, let's invite them earlier. The second thing was creating short-term, low-pressure opportunities. Well, if people are part of creating it, they're already saying, this is how I can serve. This is when. You don't have to create it for them. They will actually tell you if they're part of developing it, right? And so when you look through those things, if we invite people in earlier, not as an add-on, we created this. This is what's happening. We can even pause things and say, hey, come back, help us redevelop this. You will watch all these 6 things happen. Because they're literally part of telling you, this is where I would serve. This is when I would want to serve. This is what would work for me, instead of having a program and inviting them in. Sorry if I hijacked your.
No, not at all. And as I'm going through them, we've really kind of covered all of them. So we will put a link to the article in the show notes so that they can read that article, all of the stuff we talked about, and it'll give people a link to pass on to the volunteers, to the folks in the congregation as well, so that they can go through it again. Volunteerism has shifted. It is shifting. It is not bad news. There are really good things into it, and we simply need to understand what that is so we can adapt to it, is the summary of everything we just talked about with Lori here. But we can't just summarize it and let you go, of course. Before we get to the bonus material, when we'll specifically talk a little bit more about how to rethink church programs to allow for volunteer flexibility, let's throw the lightning round questions at you. All right. Lightning round question number one: what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years, and how have you adapted to them?
Since I'm speaking to small churches all the time, and that's what I do, I will just say I think the biggest change is people are coming in very different. It's pretty much the whole podcast we just talked about today. People are smarter. They're looking for more depth. They're looking for more connection, and they're just not wanting transactional. You come in, you do this, I do this for you, you do this for me. We're past that now. So how I've adapted to it and what I teach is building good relationships like Jesus did, like the soft skills. Like we learn this in jobs and in business training. Like it's not just the ministry skills, it's the soft skills, which are really loving people well, learning empathy, learning, you know, how God designed us to connect with each other is going deeper in our understanding of humans. So I think it makes the hugest difference.
Yeah, fully agree. I just wish somebody would come up with a term other than soft skills, because soft sounds lesser. It's not, but it sounds that to some people. But I agree that that's so important for us.
See, and I like soft better. I like
Okay, go
soft
ahead.
better.
Is that a male-female thing we got going here, maybe? I don't know. Or is it a cultural thing? Or is it a generational thing? Or is it just the two of us have different approaches?
You know, I don't know, but I think part of it is the we're learning now that harsh and louder isn't always the best. Like the
Yeah.
softer voice is often the wiser voice, right? And so
Yeah.
when they say soft skills, I think, I don't know. I kind of like soft. I
Yeah.
like small too. I like small
You
better than
know,
big.
yeah.
So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I just did a whole 5-minute rant on the podcast about going softer from the pulpit. So what am I complaining about?
I don't know.
Yeah, all right. Number two, what free or cheap resource like an app or a website has helped you lately that you'd recommend for small church ministry?
Well, you and I both know we've got most of it, you and me. So I would say go to carlvaders.com and smallchurchministry.com. I mean, there just isn't a lot out there that
Yeah.
is built for smaller churches. So yeah, sorry, that's what I
No,
got.
that's perfectly fine. We've got friends we partner with who are doing similar things as well, but there's a whole lot at both of our websites, so that's a perfectly good one to recommend. I highly recommend yours as well. Number three, what's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
Oh, I've got tons of it, you know, like throughout history, right? Throughout my history in ministry. But I think most recently, one of the things that I'm really embracing is using more coaching schools. I'm sorry, coaching skills instead of advice skills, like really using coaching skills, asking really good questions instead of being the one to say, hey, this is the way it's done, or this is what you should do, this is how to do it. You know, coming in with more curiosity. Well, what is that like in your life? What's that like in your church setting? Right? The coaching skills versus the consultation, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I'm even seeing this in our ministry, and we're beginning to move toward more cohorts and more coaching as a bigger emphasis than the seminar and conference. I'll still be doing both, but there's a much higher desire for the cohort and for the coaching and for a chance to have dialogue, to talk back and forth, to build a sense of community, in addition to hearing from somebody from a stage. But that's the part that's growing even more. And I think that's reflective in the entire conversation we've had as well.
Yeah, agreed.
The final question is then this: what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
Wow, funniest or weird? Honestly, I really love I don't know if this is funniest, but I think it's fun.
Okay.
I love the emphasis that some churches are putting into the neurodiverse world of so many of us when there's fidget toys, when there's musical instruments for other people to play, the engagement that happens in worship services in some places that are like looking to connect with people who don't just want to sit in the pew, right? I think it's fun. I don't think it's weird. I think it's amazing, but it
Yeah.
does make me smile. It's the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, no, I agree. Just this past Sunday in my home church, small church, obviously, given the ministry we do, during the sermon, I kept hearing a voice behind me. And finally, to the point where, like, they weren't quitting, or they just, and I turned back and I saw a young man, probably late teens, early 20s, leaning forward in his seat, his face in his hands that were cupped in front of his face. And as I listened, he was basically paraphrasing what the preacher was saying as they were saying it. And I recognized this is someone who's neurodivergent, and the way they understand something is to repeat it to themselves. So he knew that he was speaking it silently. He had his hands cupped around his face so it would bother as few people as possible. And I noticed others, they would look around kind of irritating, and then they'd look back and they saw what he was doing. And you could see everybody kind of smile and going, like there was a good for him kind of feeling in that little circle of us who were around who could hear him. Once we recognized what was happening there, he was leaning into it and he was in a space where he knew he could be safe. He wasn't going to be asked to remove himself from the facility because he was engaged in the message and he was doing the best he could to understand it under the circumstances while doing the best he could to not disturb those around him as much as possible as well. That to me was a real sign of positive things happening within that congregation and in the life of that young man that just made me smile.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very beautiful. Well, Lori, if anybody wants to follow up with you, who wants to get any more of the great resources that you have to offer, what's the best way for them to do that?
Just go to smallchurchministry.com. You can access everything and find us there. You'll see our upcoming free conferences through that website, our network, our website, our podcast links, everything will be right there. So smallchurchministry.com.
Terrific. And again, for those who want to listen to the bonus material, we're going to talk about some ways to restructure and rethink your church programs to help volunteers have some more flexibility in the way that they volunteer. Go to karlvaders.com/support to become a monthly supporter and get that free link, or for free, just get that. You can go to karlvaders.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for your time, Lori. I appreciate it today. One of the most important things to understand about how people commit to a church today is that no one is showing up out of an obligation to show up. I mentioned this principle before, but it needs to be repeated often. It used to be a sign of godliness in church members that they showed up every time the church doors were open. But no one's doing that anymore. So a few years ago, we stopped doing Wednesday night Bible study, and we replaced it with something more seasonally purposeful. Now, instead of, "It's Wednesday, I need to go to church," we have an intense Bible study a few times a year. Each one lasts 4 to 6 weeks typically, then it's over. This shift has increased interest and attendance and has gotten people excited about deep Bible study again. If they know they need to lock down 4 to 6 weeks of Wednesdays, they're happy to do so. They'll even buy and use the study guides we prepare. In addition, we have an app-based daily Bible reading program that everyone does together to read through the Bible every year. This works on a daily basis because it fits people's schedules instead of the church asking them to fit our schedule. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.